When you get a splitting headache, you probably, reach for a painkiller. And you blame the weather, or maybe the fluorescent lighting in your office, or just a lack of coffee.
Right, yeah. You pop a pill, dim the lights, and just hope the throbbing goes away.
Exactly. I mean, we treat it as an isolated mechanical failure, like a temporary glitch in the hardware.
Yeah, we look at it purely physically.
But the clinical data paints a much wilder picture. To figure out what is really going on today, we have been digging through a fascinating stack of
It's
sources.
a really diverse material, actually.
Yeah, heaps of it. We've got everything from actual EMDR training manuals to a massive systematic review published in Frontiers in Psychology. And our mission for this deep dive is to understand the profound mind-body connection behind migraines.
Right, looking at how stress and trauma act as triggers.
Spot on. And we'll be critically examining body-first treatments, things like EMDR and biofeedback, to see if they actually hold up in the clinical data. Because what keeps surfacing is this idea that a migraine isn't just a regular headache.
No, not at all.
In many cases, that blinding pain is actually your nervous system stuck in a trauma loop. Okay, let's unpack this. I'm keen to get right into the biology because to understand how a psychological therapy could possibly fix a physical headache, we first have to understand the biological mechanism.
Right, how a bad day literally translates into a physical migraine.
Exactly. And the sources point out that a migraine is not just a standard tension headache, right? It is a highly complex neurological event.
That is the fundamental starting point. I mean, a migraine involves a phenomenon called cortical spreading depression.
Cortical spreading depression. I mean, that sounds incredibly
It
intense.
really is. It is essentially a wave of altered brain activity. Imagine a rolling electrical blackout moving slowly across the surface of your brain.
Wait, really? A literal wave moving across the
Yeah,
brain?
a literal physiological wave.
Hmm.
And as this wave moves, it triggers massive inflammation in the protective layers surrounding the brain.
The meninges, right?
Spot on, the meninges. And that inflammation heavily sensitizes the pain pathways. But the question is, what triggers that electrical wave in the first place?
And this is where the emotional state comes in.
Exactly. When you experience ongoing stress, your body is pushed into a constant fight or flight mode.
So the sympathetic nervous system just goes into absolute overdrive.
Precisely. Your body releases this whole cascade of stress hormones, like cortisol and adrenaline.
Which puts heaps of strain on everything.
It does. It increases systemic inflammation, tightly constricts your muscles, especially, in the neck and jaw, and it fundamentally alters your blood flow. Your brain is essentially bracing for a physical attack that, well, isn't actually happening.
It's like revving a car engine in the red zone for hours on end. The engine doesn't usually stall while you're flooring it,
Yeah,
right?
it keeps running.
It stalls the second you finally take your foot off the accelerator. And the clinical sources refer to this as the letdown effect.
Oh, the letdown effect is a perfect example of how sensitive the brain is to sudden environmental shifts.
It's so counterintuitive, though.
It is. Patients are often completely baffled when they get a debilitating migraine on, say, Saturday morning, right after a massive stressful project at work was finally finished on Friday afternoon.
Yeah, they assume that because they are finally relaxed, they should feel great.
Exactly. But biologically, it makes absolute sense. Your body was using all of its available resources, just pumping out cortisol to keep that engine revving and keep you functional.
Right, and then what?
Well, when the stressor is suddenly removed, you experience a rapid drop in those stress hormones. That sudden chemical withdrawal actually destabilizes the brain's internal environment.
So the drop in tension is the exact trigger that sets off that rolling blackout, the cortical spreading depression.
Spot on. The sudden relaxation is the trigger.
Wow. So the acute stress builds the bomb, but the sudden relaxation is what actually lights the fuse.
That is a great way to visualize it, yeah.
Yeah.
Chronic stress basically lowers your overall threshold for physical pain, leaving the nervous system totally dysregulated and, well, vulnerable to these rapid shifts.
I mean, that makes perfect sense for a stressful week at the office. But what if the stressor isn't just a tight deadline? What if the brain's alarm system becomes permanently stuck on high alert because of something that happened years or even decades ago?
Now we're getting into the deeper mechanisms.
Yeah, because the sources dive deeply into the role of trauma, and the connection between severe trauma and chronic migraines is apparently bidirectional.
Yes, they feed into each other in a really vicious cycle. One of the sources highlights a study conducted at a Veterans Affairs hospital.
Right, looking at PTSD.
Exactly. They looked at veterans with PTSD and found that those who had comorbid PTSD and migraines experienced significantly more severe disabling migraines compared to veterans who only had migraines.
Which is absolutely gutting. And it isn't just combat trauma, right? The research points out that early life trauma alters the body's stress response permanently.
Yes. The data on adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, is frankly staggering.
Oh, I was reading this part. It really is.
The research shows that having four or more ACEs, which encompasses things like physical or emotional abuse, neglect, or, you know, severe household dysfunction, that more than doubles the risk of experiencing chronic migraines in adulthood.
Doubles the risk?
Yeah.
Just from the environment you grew up in, that affects your whole one out.
It really does. It has a massive ripple effect.
The clinical blogs even describe migraines as acting like physical memories. They say they can surface on the exact anniversaries of traumatic events or following an emotional overload.
Yes, the body keeps a very strict ledger.
Now, I want to push back on this a bit, or at least pause here, because for someone listening, this might sound a bit like metaphorical poetry.
I can see how it sounds that way, yeah.
I mean, it's easy to accept that stress causes muscle tension, but saying the body remembers trauma by scheduling a migraine on a specific anniversary, that sounds almost supernatural. How literal is this biology? How does the body actually know what the date is?
This raises an important question, actually. It is a very natural skepticism to have, but the mechanism is entirely literal and biological.
Okay, break that down for me.
It comes down to how the brain encodes memory. Usually think of explicit memory, right? The things you consciously recall.
Like remembering what you had for breakfast.
Exactly. But trauma is heavily encoded in implicit memory, primarily by the amygdala, which acts as the brain's threat detection center.
So the amygdala is taking notes during the traumatic event.
It is taking highly detailed subconscious notes. If a traumatic event happened at a specific time of year, the brain encodes all the surrounding environmental cues.
Like what kind of cues?
The angle of the sun, the temperature of the air, specific smells, even the subtle changing of the season.
Oh, wow. Like a subconscious tripwire.
Exactly like a tripwire. When the anniversary approaches, the conscious mind might be completely distracted with daily life. You might not even realize what day it is.
Right.
But the amygdala recognizes the pattern of the changing season or the specific light. It perceives a threat based on that historical data and triggers the exact same fight or flight cascade.
Which means the inflammation rises, the blood vessels react.
And the migraine is triggered. The pain pathways and the nervous system remain hypervigilant. So the pain is a very real physical alarm bell ringing in response to an invisible subconscious trigger.
So if the root of the pain is often a nervous system that is jammed in this trauma loop, it becomes glaringly obvious why traditional painkillers are only a Band-Aid.
They are essentially just masking the symptom.
Right. You cannot fix a software glitch by just turning off the computer monitor. The sources suggest we have to look at body-first approaches to actually rewire the brain to feel safe.
And this is where therapies like EMDR, eye movement desensitization, and reprocessing enter the clinical picture for chronic pain management.
Which most people recognize as a frontline treatment for PTSD, right?
Yes. But the literature shows it is gaining serious traction for conditions like chronic daily headaches, along with things like EFT or emotional freedom techniques and somatic experiencing.
So if painkillers are just silencing the alarm, these body-first therapies are like hitting the factory reset button on the whole security system.
That is a brilliant analogy, yes.
Yeah. But here's where I need you to explain mechanics. Because on the surface, the idea that moving your eyes back and forth while thinking about a memory could stop a migraine sounds, well, bizarre. How does this actually work in the brain?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the core mechanism of EMDR relies on something called bilateral stimulation.
Meaning two sides.
Yes. Usually, this means the patient follows the therapist's fingers back and forth with their eyes, or maybe uses alternating tapping on their knees. The prevailing scientific theory is that this dual attention task taxes the working memory.
Taxing the working memory? Can you give us an analogy for what that actually means in practice?
Okay, imagine you are trying to solve a complex multi-step math equation in your head.
Okay, I'm with you.
Now imagine trying to solve that same equation while someone is standing across the room randomly throwing tennis balls at you to catch.
Oh, I would absolutely drop the balls. Or I would just fail the math problem.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because your brain only has a finite amount of processing power in its working memory at any given moment.
Right.
When you recall a traumatic memory, it usually floods the brain with intense emotion and physical sensations. But if you are forcing your brain to track a fast-moving physical stimulus in the present moment, like the therapist's fingers. It literally does not have the bandwidth to simultaneously render the full emotional intensity of the trauma.
Oh, wow. So it degrades the quality of the memory.
Spot on. The memory loses its emotional charge. But more importantly for pain patients, this process triggers a parasympathetic relaxation response.
It forces the nervous system out of survival mode.
Yes. When you do this while focusing on the specific triggers or the stored tension, which is often held in the jaw and neck for migraine sufferers, it lowers pain sensitivity. It breaks the neurological link between the past distress and the present physical pain.
That is fascinating. The sources also mention something called the progressive approach to EMDR and parts work, which are used alongside somatic experiencing. How does that differ from just standard EMDR therapy?
Well, standard EMDR can be incredibly intense. If a patient has complex, layered trauma alongside severe chronic pain, jumping straight into their worst memory can actually overwhelm the nervous system.
Which would just trigger a massive pain flare-up, the exact opposite of what we want.
Right. The progressive approach takes a much gentler, heavily scaffolded route. It focuses on building internal resources and ensuring the patient feels entirely safe before any trauma is processed.
And what about parts work?
Parts work is a fascinating component. It involves mapping the internal landscape of the patient's mind. Trauma often fragments our psychological responses into different parts.
Like different personas?
Sort of. A part that is terrified, a part that is angry, or a part that carries the physical pain itself.
So instead of addressing a massive, monolithic block of trauma, the therapist works with these individual parts separately.
Yes. They might ask the patient to internally communicate with the part that is generating the migraine, asking what it is trying to protect them from. It sounds abstract, but it is a highly structured way to gently treat complex trauma without overwhelming the patient.
Speaking of structured measurements, there was a fascinating note in the sources about biofeedback. Specifically, there was a 2004 pilot study by Friedberg on thermal biofeedback for patients with fibromyalgia.
Another severe chronic pain condition, yes.
Right. They combined EMDR with this thermal biofeedback and measured an average increase in the patient's hand temperature. I mean, why do we care if their hands got warmer?
That detail is actually crucial. Cold hands are a classic measurable sign of sympathetic nervous system activation.
Oh, really?
Yes. When you go into fight or flight, your body pulls blood away from the extremities and pools it in the vital organs and large muscle groups, preparing you to run or fight.
So warming hands means the danger has passed.
Exactly. An increase in hand temperature is a direct physiological indicator of a relaxing autonomic effect. It proves that the therapy isn't just making the patient feel better emotionally.
It is actually shifting the body's internal state on a biological level.
Yes, forcing the parasympathetic nervous system back online and opening up those constricted blood vessels.
I mean, the theory is incredibly compelling and the analogies make total sense. But we need to look at the hard evidence. What actually happens when you put these body-first therapies to the test in clinical trials? Is this a miracle cure?
The clinical data is where we have to be very rigorous.
Yeah, because we have a massive systematic review from Frontiers in Psychology that looked at EMDR for conditions other than PTSD. They pulled together 90 different studies.
The reality in those studies is complex. Let's look at the pilot study conducted in an Istanbul hospital by Konak and colleagues in 2011.
Right, the one with chronic daily headaches.
Yes, they took patients suffering from chronic daily headaches and used a modified EMDR headache protocol.
How is it modified from the normal PTSD version?
Instead of just targeting childhood trauma, they asked patients to focus on the first headache they could ever remember, any stressful events close to when the chronic headaches began, and their current physical triggers.
And the results were pretty dramatic. There was a massive reduction in the frequency of the headaches. The duration dropped significantly. And crucially, there was a major decrease in emergency room visits and the use of heavy painkillers.
Which is fantastic.
Which sounds brilliant. But here's where it gets really interesting. Because there was a weird contradiction in the data.
Yes, there was a catch. The Istanbul study showed absolutely no reduction in pain intensity.
Right. If the frequency dropped and the duration dropped, but the intensity remained exactly the same, meaning it hurts just as blindingly much when you do get a migraine, is that actually a success?
What's fascinating here is how we define a clinical victory.
Because if the pain score doesn't change, I'd say it didn't work.
For someone who does not suffer from chronic pain, success means a pain score of zero. But for chronic sufferers, whose entire lives, relationships, and careers are dictated by these attacks, the metric for success is entirely different.
How so?
Reducing the frequency so they can actually hold down a job, and reducing the duration so they lose a few hours instead of 3 whole days in the dark room. That is life-changing.
That is fair. Quality of life over absolute eradication.
Exactly. Avoiding the ER and reducing reliance on harsh painkillers that destroy your stomach over time is a massive victory, even if the therapy isn't a flawless magic bullet.
Now, contrast this with another protocol mentioned in the sources that actually did seem to target the pain directly in the moment, the Marcus Protocol from 2008.
The Marcus Protocol is quite different from the Istanbul study. It was designed specifically for acute migraines.
Meaning the patient is currently in the middle of a severe attack.
Right. And it combines eye movements with diaphragmatic breathing and cranial compression.
Wait, let me stop you, though. Cranial compression. Are they just, like, squeezing the patient's head?
It sounds a bit medieval, I know. But it is a very specific physical technique. It involves applying gentle, sustained pressure to specific points on the cranium and the base of the skull.
What's the goal of doing that during a migraine?
The physiological goal is to stimulate the vagus nerve, which is the superhighway of the parasympathetic nervous system. It also relieves the deep physical muscular tension in the fascia that contributes to the autonomic cascade.
And when they combine that physical pressure with the eye movements and the breathing, the results were frankly astonishing. They tested patients in the middle of a migraine, and 95% of the patients who received this integrated protocol reached zero pain within 1 hour.
It is a truly remarkable finding.
I mean, 95% hitting zero pain in an hour sounds like the exact miracle cure we were looking for. Why isn't every neurologist in the world prescribing this program?
Because, to be brutally honest, we have to look critically at the limitations of the data. And the Frontiers systematic review lays this out very clearly.
Right. The evidence overall for these alternative applications of EMDR is classified as weak to moderate.
Yes. Many of these studies, including some of the pilot studies reporting massive success, have incredibly small sample sizes.
Right. If you are testing a protocol on, say, 15 people, it is statistically dangerous to assume it will work the same way on 1 million people.
Spot on. Furthermore, the review pointed out that only about a third of the 90 studies they looked at were randomized controlled trials, which is the gold standard for clinical research.
So what were the rest?
Mostly observational group studies or individual case reports. We also really have to talk about the dropout rates.
Yeah, why are people dropping out of a clinical program if it is supposed to be curing their pain?
Because healing trauma is genuinely hard work. The systematic review noted high dropout rates across several studies. EMDR requires you to intentionally focus on deeply distressing memories.
Which sounds exhausting.
It is exhausting. For some patients, the temporary increase in distress is simply too overwhelming, or the process is too time-consuming, and they leave the clinical trial.
And here's the most challenging piece of data from the review. In some of the rigorous controlled trials, EMDR was proven to be no more effective than standard cognitive behavioral therapy, or even hypnosis.
This is where the scientific community is heavily divided. The review mentioned a study by Ray and Page in 2002 comparing EMDR to hypnosis for chronic pain.
And what happened?
In that specific trial, only the hypnosis group showed a statistically significant improvement in pain scores during the session. EMDR did not reach significance.
Wow, if standard CBT or hypnosis works just as well in some trials, it begs the question, are the eye movements actually doing anything at all?
That is the ultimate question.
Or is the active ingredient in all these therapies simply the fact that you are sitting in a safe room, facing your fear, and talking about it?
Is the bilateral stimulation biologically necessary to tax the working memory, as the theory suggests? Or is the active mechanism just safe, guided exposure, which CBT also provides? The psychological mechanisms at play are incredibly complex.
Sometimes just the exposure element, visualizing the fear and acknowledging it, is what provides the relief.
Exactly. And the systematic review even pointed out that studies sometimes lack sufficient details about their exact procedures.
Which makes it nearly impossible for other scientists to replicate the success and standardize the treatment.
We need much larger, more rigorous, double-blind trials. We need to test these protocols on hundreds of patients to filter out the placebo effect and isolate the exact mechanisms.
But despite those clinical limitations, the overall consensus from the literature remains clear, right? Body-first approaches offer a highly promising alternative to traditional pain management, especially when standard care just isn't working.
Absolutely, because it forces the medical community to treat the patient as a whole system. It addresses the emotional baggage that the nervous system is hauling around.
Rather than just treating the brain as a standalone organ that, you know, occasionally malfunctions.
It is a fundamental paradigm shift in how we understand and treat chronic physical pain.
We have covered so much ground today. We started with the biological reality of a migraine, exploring how the stress of a fight-or-flight response, the mechanisms of cortical spreading depression, and the sudden drop of the letdown effect can trigger blinding pain.
A physical reality of the condition, yes.
And then we dug into the bidirectional link between trauma, like high ACE scores and PTSD, and the way our amygdala encodes those experiences into our implicit memory. And we looked critically at body-first approaches like EMDR, somatic experiencing, and biofeedback.
And while the clinical trials have small sample sizes, and debate remains over the exact active mechanisms,
these therapies offer a genuine path to reprogramming a nervous system stuck in a trauma loop. So what does this all mean for you? It means that your pain is valid, it is neurologically complex, and it is deeply intertwined with your history.
It is about addressing the root cause rather than just endlessly managing the symptoms.
Spot on. If you are struggling with chronic migraines, it might be time to look beyond the medicine cabinet and start looking at how your nervous system processes safety. But I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over today. If our physical pain, like a blinding migraine, is sometimes just a loud, desperate alarm bell for an unprocessed emotional history, what other strange physical quirks, twinges, or aches in your body are actually just your past, desperately trying to get your attention?